doing so good. I'm doing this service on the service today is on exploring our imperfections and allowing them to be seen. And I just want to tell you right up front, every service, so this is the third one, and each of the prior two, there have been some real instances of imperfections being revealed. So we haven't, maybe it's going to be the Zerberts in the back. I like those, if that's what it is. But it's interesting the ways that the Spirit moves in the message in ways we don't expect. The first service, my iPad totally died, so that was fun, in the middle of the sermon. Thus, we have a paper backup. So today is my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. And so I want to start with sharing a classic story about my mom, or at least we think it's classic. So my mom had just come back from the doctor. She was sharing about how it went with me and my sisters. It wasn't a huge deal, actually, but it was kind of embarrassing, at least to her. As she went on, she grimaced with dread. "What, Mom?" we asked. She said, "Well, I just hate that I'm going to have to tell Jane all about this." Jane was her best friend since they were both in kindergarten, and over 50 years later, they still talked every day. "You know, Mom," I said gently, "if you don't want to tell Jane, you don't have to tell Jane." And then less gently, my sisters and I burst into laughter. But my mom didn't really get the joke. Even if it was embarrassing, I mean, how could she not tell Jane? It was a true thing going on in her life. My mom, I've learned over the course of my life, has a high willingness verging on compulsion to share things that others might decide to keep tucked away. The upside of this is you never wonder what's going on with my mom, how she feels about you or about anything. She literally is who she says she is, as she says most everything. The downside, on the other hand, is that, well, the things that are true about her when you're her daughter often have a lot to do with you. And it turns out that I'm not quite so willing or eager to share everything with everyone. Over the years, I've come to realize, I think with some relief, that most people are not like my mom and are actually more like me. Most of us have things about ourselves that we keep hidden, sometimes very hidden, even from ourselves. This is what psychologists call denial, and it is actually a coping technique that can be very helpful in surviving immediate crises, but actually dangerous and even deadly if clung to for too long. Today, we kick off a new sermon series, what we're calling Real Life. We thought of it because we realized we've spent a number of Sundays in the recent weeks talking about courageous love and its call for justice, the good news of our universalist faith that proclaims we're all in this together. We hadn't really dealt with how all this plays out in real life, you know, in the here and now. We started to wonder if we were enabling a kind of denial ourselves, one that wasn't really addressing the kind of issues that we all face in the everyday, those moments of living that make up our lives. It is such a Unitarian Universalist temptation, after all, to talk about faith in the kind of generic sense, or courageous love as it applies to some theoretical whole. But how does courageous love apply to, say, how much credit card debt we're carrying? Or how often we're visiting the liquor store? Or in Colorado, the pot store? Or to the fights we're having with our kids, or the fights we're having with our partners? What does our faith have to do with the judging voice in our heads, or the grief that everyone thinks we're already over, or the hurts we caused, maybe on purpose? And how does courageous love apply to the loneliness and longing we feel when things are quiet, or even how much we try to fill that emptiness with food or sex or gambling or maybe all of the above. Or how much we try to punish it out of ourselves through exercise or not eating or overwork or a myriad of other things. When I think back to the UU services that I've been a part of, I'm kind of amazed to realize that not too many of them tackle these kind of real life sort of questions. It is as if our own sort of denial, like, nope, not here. Here we're fine, we're good. We've got everything totally under control. Right? It's fascinating, really. But not that uncommon in Unitarian Universalism or in life, just human life more generally. You may have heard about the new podcast with Nora McKerney called Terrible, Thanks for Asking. It just was an interview she did on NPR. See, McKerney has had some pretty awful things happen to her recently. She had her husband was diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer, and then her dad had 4 kinds of cancer, hit him all at the same time, and then right after that, her child died, all within just a month of each other. And yet, what she realized is people would ask her, how are you doing? And she'd say, I'm fine, thanks for asking. And so she realized that's what everybody did, actually, that denial was actually a social rule we all seem to follow, that it is carefully taught, which is why she started her podcast called Terrible, Thanks for Asking. Yet this deception of ourselves or of others, ironically, it keeps us isolated and disconnected in ways that prevent us from healing those exact struggles that we're trying to keep hidden and to protect ourselves by doing so. It's ironic. The thing that might actually help us connect and heal, we struggle to do. There's good reason for this, of course. In the case of our faith community and Unitarian Universalism, most of our reasons I'm prepared to blame almost entirely on William Ellery Channing. You may not have even heard of him, but it's his fault, clearly. Channing is considered the founder of American Unitarianism by way of his sermon in the early 19th century called Unitarian Christianity. His concept of salvation by character became the rallying cry for Unitarianism throughout the 19th and 20th centuries. On the one hand, his ideas were empowering, especially in light of the prevailing Calvinism of the time. You know Calvinism, it's that theological concept that says that humans have no choice, no free will at all, and that basically we're all worms. So, it was hopeful when Channing said salvation could in fact lie in our own hands, and that human nature could actually be on our way towards perfection, that we could be well on our way through our own choice, our own intent, and our own will. But on the other hand, these same ideas left little room to talk about our struggles, our doubts, even our failures, let alone our incompetence, our helplessness, and our sometimes need to surrender to it all. Which has meant over the years that we have created our own version of keeping up appearances, which mostly I find in our churches tends to take the form of not being able to ask for help. Perhaps you know what I mean. Because if to be a Unitarian Universalist is to be, as Channing said, striving towards perfection and well on our way, then if we are struggling or hurting or caught in a life we didn't intend, then we must be the only ones, right? We worry that if we share what's really going on in our lives, then we would be a total bummer to the UU happy party. Or worse, we'd be the lone juicy gossip in an otherwise perfectly perfect show. We don't want to be judged or remembered always for the one thing that just happens to be going on right now. Better to just play along, and keep those more vulnerable parts of ourselves hidden, hopefully forgotten. This subtle messaging of our faith came to me most clearly one evening. It was before I went to seminary and our good friends were struggling with a likely upcoming divorce and with some real challenges with their sometimes violent and grief-stricken eighth grader. Their family was so vulnerable and fragile. And they were members of their local UU church. So they invited us one night to come to an event that was about creating a circle of community around their eighth grader and all the eighth graders. It was a coming-of-age community event. I remember so vividly the moment when it hit me how much of this church and the program they were running, which was a pretty UU standard program, assumed an intact family that had mostly stable parent-child relationships and a stability and health in the adults themselves. Given that none of that was the case, my beloved friends and their beloved child, they tried really hard to answer the questions that they were given, but they literally made no sense. So afterwards, each of the little families that were tasked to talk to each other, they got up, all the other families, to share their answers like perfectly conveyed. And my friends gave their answers. Less perfectly so, but still, mostly I knew it was make-believe. I was so angry at that church and at our faith that night because that kid, he needed support. They needed support. They needed the very promise they were offered. They needed that circle of community that would meet them in that coming-of-age moment where almost all of us are entirely vulnerable. It's just that his coming-of-age didn't look like a straight line, didn't look like the problems of, I think it was like some of the struggles they named were things like, oh, they didn't get into the AP courses versus the other. I mean, it was so a different world than what he was struggling with. And my guess is he was not the only one in that room with those struggles. And that family was not the only one. But that program told all of them, anyone who might be struggling, don't tell your church about that. We don't have people like that here. You know what's especially ironic to me about all of this? Is that if you know Channing's biography, you know he struggled immensely with his public versus his private self, and specifically what parts of himself were acceptable or worthy or enough. See, Channing was obsessive in his work and self-punishing in his sleeping and eating habits, mostly because he was trying to overcome what he called in his memoir his effeminacy and his unwanted sexual fantasies. See, for all the talk of human capacity and will, from what I can tell, our Unitarian theological inheritance is also shaped by denial and shame. Which brings me to today's good news. Denial and shame, as researcher Brené Brown teaches us, can be overcome by something kind of counterintuitive, in fact, which is by coming clean. To the way to stop feeling like we have to hide is to stop hiding. Taking that risk of stepping out and sharing those things that we're afraid make us seem unlovable. This movement towards the light allows us to create a container for a new truth to emerge in our own lives and in our faith as we come to realize that we're not alone. For only in the sharing the broken parts of our lives are we able to engage more fully the beauty, the sacred, the real. As long as we are siphoning off parts, there remains something make-believe to all of life, a depth we can't quite touch, a possibility left unknown. Which, you may be relieved, does not mean that we must all become my mom. I'm relieved, personally. But But more, it invites us simply to unburden ourselves from that shaping and shielding, the secret keeping and storytelling, those assumptions that keep us from believing that what we have is enough, who we are is enough. These things that withhold the real healing power of our community and our faith, this promise that there is a love holding us, that it could hold us right here, right as we are. To imagine that we can take it, even if it's hard, that the truth can make us stronger, more courageous, more capable of being the church and the people we long to be. Most of the time, as Adrienne Rich says, we are eager and longing for the possibility of telling the truth. These possibilities may seem frightening, but they are not destructive. To seek the truth in love, as the words of our covenant promise, could bring us more life rather than less. And it is with this in mind that I want to end my sermon today by inviting us into a little experiment. You'll see in the insert on the other side of the lyrics, there's a list of questions with a phone number. And so as you're pulling that out also, I invite you to do what we often tell you not to do in church, which is to pull out your phone and to turn it on. Because my invitation to each of you is to text to this number the answer to those questions that are there. Whatever is maybe going on in your life or in your heart that you mostly keep shielded for whatever reason. Maybe it's a question you're wondering about. Maybe it's something you love about yourself, but you worry others wouldn't. The text you send will go to an app that will display here on this app, but it'll display the number it came from, but nothing else. There's no names attached. And after we're done today, we'll delete everything there. So if you don't have a phone, you could consider asking a neighbor if you could use theirs. I know there's an extra layer of vulnerability in doing that, but you can have them show you how to delete it right as soon as you're done. But if you don't want to text or if none of that feels comfortable to you, then I just invite you to spend a few moments meditating on what you would say. What are those true things that you don't feel you can speak? As I receive your texts, I will begin to weave them into a spoken prayer, offering them and you in your wholeness a welcome and a blessing. I do want to acknowledge that I may use some of the words, the actual words that you text here. So just if that concerns you, think about what words you want to use. There is a freedom, though, in knowing that even those words you're afraid could be said aloud and received. So I invite us into a few moments of reflection and texting, so that we can name some of these true things together. As we offer these things, continue to offer these things, name these true things, we create here a circle of intentional compassion. Setting an intention that everything that is true can be held in this circle, can be received, can be accepted, can be greeted as a guest here among us.